KALW.
Serial arsonists light hundreds of wildfires in our state. They're rarely caught. This is the story of how California investigators caught one of them. It starts with a sheep farmer in the Quepe Valley, a rural stretch northwest of Sacramento. When his parents called him at 3 in the morning, he assumed it was just about a sick animal. It was September, back in 2006, and the sky was lit by an orange glow.
My dad said, I got to call, the ranch is on fire, where are you? So I grabbed a couple of dogs and off we went.
The farmer's name is P.J. Phillips, and he was raised with wildfires. He knew that when the winter rains stop in California, the state becomes a tinderbox. California's wildfires are getting bigger. Most of them are started by accident. But there was something different about the way this fire started. It seemed like somebody did it on purpose.
Who would do something so demented as to, you know, set something on fire?
Today, we're looking into how investigators caught a serial arsonist. Reporter Teresa Katsourilis tells us how it took 2 years and dozens of people to track him down.
By the time PJ got to his ranch, the hills were already burning. The valley's volunteer fire department was there, but the dry winds were working against them.
Yeah, you could hear the grass burning and then the snap, crackle, pop. And the next morning, I remember it was cloudy, and it was kind of, there was a little bit of a dew, and just the smell of that charcoal smell was really, everything had burned.
When did you realize that your sheep were in the fire?
The next morning, there was a little bit of a dew, and just the smell of that charcoal smell was really, it really permeated the air, you could tell. It was devastating to see.
PJ lost 270 sheep that night. The fire cost the ranch thousands of dollars. And about a week later, a local sheriff discovered a second fire in almost the exact same spot, burning its way into PJ's ranch again. A few weeks after the fire killed his sheep, PJ got a call from the local district attorney. He told PJ that both of the fires on his ranch had been started on purpose. We don't know how many wildfires are started by arsonists, in California or anywhere else. State agencies say arsonists set around 5% of wildfires. Other studies say it's more like 20%. And we also don't really understand why arsonists do this. Profilers say a lot of arsonists feel frustrated by their lives or shortchanged. Other experts say setting fires can be a way for arsonists to regain control in their lives and exert control over others. Here's one thing we do know about arsonists. They tend to start a lot of fires. Most wildfire arsonists set dozens of them, operating for years before they're caught.
I would say that I was at some points in time probably working over 20 arson cases.
Alan Carlson is a fire investigator who's helped solve wildfire arson cases all over the country. And he is just full of stories about this stuff. In one of our first interviews, we were chatting on the phone, and he just started listing all these serial arsonists he'd caught in California. There was the woman who set fires closer and closer to her home.
She did them for over a long span of years, even lighting her own apartment complex on fire while she was in it with her kids.
Then there's the meth addict who set fires when he couldn't sleep, and then decided to tell Alan everything. So Alan unfolded a map of Northern California, gave him a pen.
We got up to about 230 fires, I think it was, and he says, that's not all I did, but that's all I can remember right now. If you come back later, I can probably do some more.
And there's the Hoopa Indian Reservation near Humboldt County, where at one point, arsonists set an average of about 400 fires a year.
I mean, I'm surprised they're not running into each other when they...
Funny you should say that.
Oh, yeah. That happened too. Alan and his team caught two arsonists while they were staking out another arsonist. Alan also oversaw Operation High Desert, the team of investigators who tracked down the guy who burned up PJ Phillips's sheep in 2006. And he's proud of this case. It's considered one of California's exemplary arson investigations. A couple thousand people live in the Quepe Valley, mostly farmers and casino workers. There's a biker-themed bar and grill that sells hot peach cobbler every morning, and the farmers throw a hoedown every year. Before they caught the man who burned PJ's sheep, most people in the Quepe Valley didn't think they had a fire problem. Back in the 90s, most of the fires were small. But as the years went by, there were just a lot of them. By 2004, there were about 10 times more fires in the Capay Valley than there used to be. And then, that year, a fire outside of town engulfed an area bigger than San Francisco. The cause was undetermined, but many suspected arson. And that is when Alan and his team, Operation High Desert, got involved in all this. Alan worked for CAL FIRE, a California agency that acts as a fire department for the state's forests and rural areas. It's actually home to one of the biggest wildfire arson investigations units in the world. Alan's office is basically Fire Central. His bookshelves are lined with hats from every state and country where he's worked. And on the wall are these big, colorful matte photographs. One is a close-up of a charred book of matches.
This is a cigarette match device.
Another is a close-up of this overhead sunglasses compartment in a car, which someone stuffed with red and gold fireworks.
The guy had three or four more hidden underneath the carpet in the back of his SUV.
These are pictures of incendiary devices, the household items that arsonists jerry-rig together and use to start fires. And this is what makes serial arsonists so hard to catch. A lot of the time, these devices are time-delayed. The smarter arsonists build them like little bombs with long fuses so that they don't start a fire until the arsonist's far away. Alan's kept pictures of the devices from his favorite cases. Two of those pictures are from the case of the Capay Valley arsonist. What was the High Desert team's first step in catching him? Figuring out his device and how it ticks. In 2005, local investigators found a rough, brittle piece of material that curved in the shape of a C. It was part of the arsonist's device, a small, flat spiral that I'm going to call the coil. For the record, I know all about the coil and how it works, but everyone I interviewed for this story asked me not to tell you about it. They don't want you to know how to make one. Alan says the coil is one of the most dangerous devices he's ever found. The coil is dangerous because it is elegant. When it burns, it rarely leaves any trace behind. The coil can also take up to 4 hours to actually start a fire, giving the arsonist lots of time to get away. The coil is like a murder weapon that doesn't pull the trigger until the killer is in another state. Then, in most cases, it erases itself, deleting any evidence that it was there. The coil confirmed a suspicion that the High Desert team had from the very beginning. Whoever designed it had a feel for fire and how it works. That meant the Capay Valley arsonist could be a firefighter. According to the investigators I've talked to, roughly a third of the arsonists they catch work in emergency services. They're paramedics, for instance, or firefighters. So this raises an obvious question. Did any of the firefighters in the Capay Valley start to suspect each other? Well, yeah, at least one of them did. Bob Eason moved to this green stretch of walnut orchards way back in 1988. He bought his own orchard, and then he and his son, Bob Jr., joined the fire department here.
Firefighters have an ability to spot arsonists.
Before moving to Capay, Bob was a fire captain in a big and prestigious department in the Bay Area. Like most rural areas, the fire department in the Capay Valley is made up entirely of volunteers. They're mostly local farmers, and they spend a lot of time together.
Volunteer fire departments are good old boy things. Best thing about being a firefighter is you meet other firefighters, and they become closer to you than your family. I couldn't imagine another job that I would have enjoyed as much.
Bob didn't notice anything fishy about the fires in the valley at first. But once he was allowed to join the volunteers, the chief caught him up on the local gossip pretty quickly.
Farmers meet first thing in the morning to bullshit. They used to meet up at a little store down there where the casino is.
The chief explained that the coil was an arsonist's device.
He says, oh, it's a thing like that, and it burns real slow. And I says, what makes you guys think that that's what's going on? And he's, oh, well, I usually find them. I can always find them. I'm thinking, good golly.
To be clear, this conversation happened in 1988. That's almost 20 years before Alan and the High Desert team investigated anything. And for the next 2 decades or so, the volunteers and their neighborhood arsonist just sort of put up with each other. It occurred to Bob that the volunteers might be dealing with one of their own. The arsonists he'd met when he was a fire captain seemed obsessive to him, completely preoccupied with fire and firefighting, and, well, so did a few of the volunteers.
They fit the profile of an arsonist.
Bob didn't tell anyone about this. Alan Carlson, the CAL FIRE investigator we've been hearing from, says that in his experience, volunteer firefighters tend to keep their suspicions to themselves.
I've seen that before, and most of them didn't come forward and say anything about him.
It's hard to turn against one of your own. So towards the end of 2005, a full year into the investigation, Alan started combing through two decades of reports from the Valley's past fires. He was looking for patterns: the firefighters who responded to fires a little too quickly, the cars that always seemed to pass by a hillside a few hours before it caught fire. And one name kept popping up.
Only one individual emerged. That was Robert Eason.
Also known as Bob Eason, but he's not the volunteer firefighter that you just heard from. Alan's talking about Bob's son.
That's him.
That's him.
Alan is showing me a picture of Bob Jr. on his computer. He looks young and slightly awkward, his dark hair already receding. Bob Jr. joined the volunteer fire department when he was 18 and loved it, really loved it. By the time Alan's team started closing in on him, Bob Jr. had been promoted to fire captain. The way Alan tells it, the fires in the Capay Valley started burning right after the Eason family moved to town. And more often than not, they happened whenever Bob Jr.'s life took a turn for the worse. There was that flurry of fires after Bob Jr. lost his job at the ambulance company, and that uptick in fires when his son was colicky. Bob Jr. used to drive through the valley's back roads in the middle of the night, driving up and down the highway until his baby fell asleep. Alan suspects that he lit fires as he went. So Alan and his team had a suspect, and in 2006, they started to follow him.
You're listening to a special presentation from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Reporter Teresa Katsourilis is following a team of investigators as they track down a serial arsonist in Northern California. Let's get back to the story.
I'm driving through the Capay Valley with Alan. Beginning in June 2006, his team of investigators had people staked out in a dozen different locations here for months.
This is the area where we had people sitting all night, hoping creatures don't come cruising through, the hogs or bears.
Their investigation also relied on roadside traffic cameras, and one of them caught Bob Jr. driving suspiciously close to the scene of the crime. In August, the team got clearance from a judge and managed to sneak a tracker onto Bob Jr.'s car. The tracker showed Bob Jr. driving suspiciously close to a fire scene later that night.
So, you see this little flat down in here,
yeah,
below these hills? That's where fires took place, right along in this strip right here.
Right here?
September 21st, okay, around midnight. Bob Jr. drives past this hill, then U-turns and drives by it again. The hillside starts burning a few hours later. The fire catches the wind, and those sheep we heard about earlier, they start to burn.
Can we walk around or no?
Sure, where would you like to walk?
All right, let's do it.
There's a lettuce farm across the highway, a few thin cows lazily grazing beneath the black trees. The fire that burned PJ's sheep was one of the most damaging fires that Bob Jr.'s accused of starting. It was also one of his last. Because a few weeks after the sheep fire, Alan's team arrested Bob Jr. and searched his house and car. They didn't find anything at first. Then, in the trash, beneath a pile of dirty diapers, they found two coils, ready to go. Bob Jr. and I have been writing to each other. He's incarcerated at the California City Correctional Facility and doesn't want to talk to me on the record right now. But his dad, Bob Sr., was willing to share what he remembers about the day his son was arrested.
I was shocked when I got a phone call from this lady here. It says, Bob, there's there must be 15 cars around your house. And when I got in the car, you know, 3 or 4 cops came over and they says, were you aware of it? Of course I wasn't aware of it. And I says, you know, I think if anything like that was going on, I would know about it.
His son was accused of lighting 16 fires in 3 months. And he was suspected of starting a lot more than that. During his investigation, Alan Carlson produced a detailed map of the valley's suspicious fires over the years. He now believes that Bob Jr. set 152 fires over the course of 18 years. It's hard for him to admit this now, but Bob Sr.'s first thought was that his son might be guilty. I asked him what made him think Bob Jr. might have done this.
30 years of, you know, worrying about him every day.
Bob Sr. and his son are close. They always have been. But their relationship is complicated. When his son was born, Bob Sr. thought it was a given that he would become a firefighter like him.
As soon as he was born, you know, I bought him fire trucks and he would play fire trucks with his little hat and that sort of thing.
But it quickly became clear Bob Jr. was different. He may have had learning disabilities. His father recalls that he couldn't pay attention in school, and his hands tend to shake when he feels stressed or emotional. So Bob Sr. steered his son away from the fire academy. Those programs take focus and test-taking skills. But his son ignored him and tried to do any kind of firefighting he could. He bounced from job to job. He could never hold one down for very long. He worked as an ambulance driver, then as an EMT, jobs that involve saving lives.
Do you think that Bob ever wanted to be a hero?
Constantly. If you listen to his stories, like I say, the stories are always different, but the hero is always the same. In his mind, he was a hero every time.
Bob Sr. doesn't think his son's the hero of this story, but he doesn't think he's the villain either. He thinks there are still a few lingering questions in this case, and that investigators were too single-minded to notice them.
Investigators, they want to find the monster. That's what investigators do.
Take the coils, for instance. The volunteers and local investigators had been finding them for decades. But when it comes to the fires that Bob Jr. was actually convicted of starting, the High Desert team never found any coils at those scenes. To Alan, the arson investigator, of course, it makes perfect sense that you wouldn't find them. The cruel genius of the coil is that it often erases itself. But this lack of evidence at some of the fire scenes drives Bob Sr. crazy.
And then say, well, because we couldn't find any evidence that he did it, therefore he had to have done it. It makes no sense.
But that didn't bother the jury at Bob Jr.'s trial. He was found guilty of 12 counts of arson. The judge sentenced Bob Jr. to 40 years in prison. To put that in perspective, the 12 fires that Bob Jr. was actually convicted of starting didn't really hurt anyone beyond PJ the farmer's sheep. Some of the fires were the size of your average bedroom. Bob Jr. calls his father from prison every Saturday. Each of those phone calls begin the same way.
You know, I have this stupid thing I do and I don't know why. How's it going? You know, well, and his answers, same old, same old.
Bob Sr. left the Capay Valley after the trial. It was too hard to live there after everything that happened. In a recent phone call, he told me he gave up his walnut orchard years ago. He traded it in for a house ringed by pine trees in a quiet town north of Chico.
As soon as you get up the hill and you get the tall trees, you're in the mountains, it's a whole different world. It's a whole lot easier living in paradise than it is living in the Capay Valley.
Yeah, that paradise.
Homes reduced to
all
rubble.
All we're seeing is charred remains of what used to be a town that people love.
Smoke still very, very thick. It's hard to breathe.
The campfire has become the deadliest wildfire.
Bob Sr. wasn't home when the campfire started this past November. But in a pretty crazy coincidence, the man who put his son in prison was there to smell the smoke. Fire investigator Alan Carlson lives in Chico now, and he awoke to a volcanic black cloud spreading through the sky.
I went down to the end of the street, take a look. There was even debris falling out where I was standing. It was like it was a light snow, you know, it was real gray ash.
85 people were killed by the campfire. Tens of thousands were displaced, and Bob Sr. was one of them. He called me a few months after it happened from Arizona, says he plans to move back to paradise as soon as he can. As the campfire burned its way into Chico, Alan went to get a better look at it.
Figuring at some point in the process, I'd probably be investigating the fire.
Alan's retired from CAL FIRE now, but he still investigates people who start fires. He works as a private consultant, and this time, he's looking into a corporation. PG&E experienced an unexplained power outage right before the campfire started, and survivors say their homes burned down because of the company's neglected and faulty equipment. Alan's been hired by one of the many potential plaintiffs who are suing PG&E over what happened.
There's certain industries or corporations out there that seem to inherently be frequent flyers when it comes to igniting fires.
It's tough to compare a fire started by a person to a fire started by a corporation. The laws that govern them are obviously different. But like the arsonists that Alan spent years tracking, corporations that start fires also tend to start a lot of them. And while plenty of those fires aren't due to criminal negligence, plenty of them could be. In a report last year, CAL FIRE found that PG&E had repeatedly broken state safety laws, which led to at least 8 fires in 2017. And whether a fire is set by a person or a corporation, the work that goes into investigating it stays more or less the same. Alan spent weeks at the campfire wreckage. He says if he's learned one thing from the Capay Valley case, it's that this kind of work pays off. The Capay Valley burned last year, and it burned the year before that. But CAL FIRE says the actual number of wildfires there has dropped since Bob Eason Jr. went to prison. In the Capay Valley, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis for Cross Currents.
Thanks to Teresa Kotsarilis for bringing us that story. It was originally produced as her master's thesis at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Special thanks to Anna Sussman, Kara Platoni, Ed Dobb, Danny Zwerdling, Mary Lee Williams, Levi Bridges, Graylin Brashear, and Spencer Silva for their support. Additional thanks to Victoria Malione, Sasha Coca, and Susie Racho.